you haven't already rated and reviewed the Single Tracks podcast in your podcast app, now's the time to do it. We're randomly selecting listener reviews to read on the show, and if we choose yours, you'll get a free Single Tracks hat in the mail. Hit pause right now, write a quick review, and then listen to future episodes to find out if you won yourself a hat. Happy trails. This episode of the Single Tracks podcast is sponsored by tripoutside.com.
Oh man, I hope this shop rents some decent mountain bikes. This'll be the fifth shop I've called.
Bob's Bikes, what's up?
Oh hi, I'm planning a trip out to Colorado from Georgia next month, and I was wondering if you rent enduro bikes, like maybe the Transition Sentinel or the new Santa Cruz Mega Tower?
Wait, you're coming from Georgia? You should probably stick to the XC trails here. We got some Schwinn hardtails that are probably more your speed.
No thanks. I'm sure I'll be fine with an enduro bike, really. So do you have any available for rent?
I think we might have a couple. Not sure what sizes, though. My manager's at lunch right now, so I have to call you back. Renting outdoor equipment shouldn't be this hard. TripOutside.com makes finding, comparing, and booking rental gear quick and easy. Your equipment will be ready and waiting at the outfitter so you can get to your adventure right away. From mountain bikes and stand-up paddleboards to skis, snowboards, surfboards, and camping gear, you'll find whatever you need to get outdoors at the best prices. Now available in over 60 top outdoor destinations and growing daily. Next time, start with tripoutside.com to find the best places to explore outdoors. Hey everybody, welcome to the Single Tracks podcast. My name is Jeff, and today my guest is Darcy Wittenberg. So Darcy is a partner, director, producer, and cinematographer at Ant Hill Films. Ant Hill has produced some of the most iconic mountain bike films in recent memory, including Return to Earth, Unreal, and Strength in Numbers. Thanks for joining us, Darcy.
Thanks for having me. A little bit of everything, I guess, like anybody, but lots of different sports films, surf, skiing, snowboarding, skate, a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's obviously so much variety nowadays that it's easy to just, watch every combination that's out there, right? Netflix, see what's on.
Right.
Little Instagram videos. Yeah, I mean, these days it's a lot.
Yeah. Well, did you watch that kind of film growing up, like ski films or even mountain bike films? I mean, mountain bike films have been around for a while now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, growing up, it would have been more snowboarding films and stuff like that. I mean, I was kind of more into snowboarding in the 90s.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I guess I was equally into biking and snowboarding at that time. But at that time, there was definitely more snowboard films that came out every season. And those had a lot of influence on my life back then. And I remember watching the film TV3. And within months, I was living in Whistler after watching that film.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, what was your inspiration then for choosing your career path? Was it more the cinematography and filmmaking and storytelling, or was it more of the extreme sports, like just want a mountain bike and find a way to pay for it?
Yeah, it just started with the sports actually, because I was into mountain biking since I was a young kid. And then living in Whistler, you kind of start to get surrounded by people that are either in films or making films. And so it just kind of came through my circle of friends. And one of my buddies at the time, Carlo Wine, he was making snowboarding movies. And I was into photography as a hobby. And he needed a hand one day. And so I just picked up a 16mm camera and started helping out. And then also at the time, I was living in Eric Berger's basement suite, and Eric Berger's a really well-established ski photographer and was shooting biking in the mid-90s too. So all those things started to kind of come together, and I saw that there could be an opportunity to make some money at that.
Yeah.
I mean, at that time, you know, I had no idea what it would turn into or that it could turn into a career. But yeah, it's just something that I saw and saw, okay, well, this is a cool way I can combine, you know, the passion of being in the outdoors with the passion of photography, and one thing led to another.
Yeah. So it sounds like when you got started too, this was like pre-digital days, right?
Yeah. Back then, everything was being shot on 16 millimeter film. So yeah, it was the type of thing where, you know, you'd film your sequences and you wouldn't actually get to see anything until months later.
Yeah.
When you'd kind of go into the film transfer and see the fruits of everyone's labor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a totally different era.
Yeah. So I imagine like the equipment was bigger and more difficult to deal with. And then the editing probably took longer too. I mean, it has it been like a massive change going from analog to digital?
Yeah, it's been a huge change. And of course, it, you know, didn't exactly happen all at once. It was kind of this like slow transfer in the kind of early 2000s, I guess, when things were starting to shift away from film to digital.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when we made our first mountain bike film that I was also involved in producing, which was the Collective in 2003,
yeah,
we shot most of the action on 16 millimeter, but we were already shooting digital as well to capture the kind of lifestyle scenes and just to always have a camera rolling.
Yeah.
So it just slowly took over where maybe it was 20%, and then in Rome, it was maybe a little bit more. And then by the time we got to, the first Anto movie, Follow Me, it was shifted over into digital.
Yeah, cool. So as a filmmaker, you know, somebody or in a photographer too, like what is it about mountain biking that you find interesting?
Well, I guess it's trying to capture the feeling of mountain biking. I think that is so compelling.
Yeah.
It's an impossible task. And just some of the places that it takes you, and obviously the beauty of nature that you see all the time when you're out there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just an itch that needs to be scratched, I guess. And trying to, trying to just convey to others what it's like, what it feels like, what it looks like. And just trying to get other people excited about it too.
Yeah, that's good to hear from a professional, because I know a lot of us, you know, I mean, everybody's got a GoPro now and is out there and wants to share that experience. And I've had that thought myself many times, you know, flowing down a trail and just being like, oh man, this is so great. Like I wish my brother could experience this, or, you know, my parents or people, you know, that I'm close to, but they don't do it. And yeah, you can never quite capture that. And the other thing you always hear too is people always say like, oh, you know, it was much steeper than it looks on film. And yeah, it's interesting to hear that even as professionals, you still feel like you're not able to capture that, or that it's a challenge.
Yeah, it is definitely a never-ending challenge that keeps us pretty hungry to always be pushing ourselves and trying to innovate new ways to film and to capture the action. And sometimes now, you know, that we've been at it for a long time, there are times where you can make things feel and look faster, bigger than they are in reality, just from the perspective that you use. But at the end of the day, there's no replacement for actually being there and being in the moment. And it still hits me all the time when we're filming, like when you feel how, you know, how explosive it is when a rider blows by you, and you're just like, man, like we're not capturing that at all. It's like impossible to do.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe VR, but yeah, I guess that would be a separate discussion.
Yeah, exactly.
So your latest film, Return to Earth, is awesome. Hopefully a lot of people have seen that and seen some of the clips that have been posted online. Did that start with a specific creative spark or direction?
Yeah, it did. Part of the reason we showed the Collective Tree at the very beginning and the opening credits was that is where the inspiration came from. When we made Unreal, we had a great time making that film, and the concept was really to try and create these like larger than life experiences that don't happen in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Like the dirt snowing from the sky, and
right,
riding on glaciers and being chased by bears and all those types of concepts. So for us, you know, the pendulum kind of swung back to our roots in our earlier days, where we wanted to make a film that was more soulful and more trying to like capture the essence of of mountain biking, the feeling of it, and just trying to capture the soul of it. So that was like the very roots of that idea. And then we started to think about, how close to the collective would we make it? And we tossed around the ideas of doing a remake or something like that. And then as the brainstorms developed and new ideas came out, then all the segments started to form in our mind as they are in the film now.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, I mean, what's the first thing? I mean, it sounds like it's the concept, but then is it the athletes or the locations or the tricks? Like, what is kind of the thing that drives it? Do the athletes, I mean, my guess would be maybe the athletes sort of dictate that?
Yeah, it usually starts with the concept, the segment concept, and or a location that might fit a certain concept. Like, take, for example, Patagonia was like a... That wasn't the first location we had in mind, but we knew that we wanted a segment in the film that was about immersing yourself in nature for an extended period of time. Mm. And the concept behind that one was that, you get a different feeling when you go out into nature for 1 hour or 1 day or 10 days. Like, the length of immersion in that experience directly affects the impact it can have on you. And so it was important to us to do a segment where we were like, let's go somewhere where we can completely immerse ourselves in the natural environment, be cut off from everything else, and then let's just capture that feeling as best we could. And so that was the initial concept. And then we said, okay, well, what riders would be the right riders to take on a trip like this? Who would be an authentic voice to be able to speak about that feeling and trips like that? And that's how you end up with a perfect kind of combination, at least in our mind, of having Hunter and Casey Brown and Joey Schuessler, because they're all very legitimate in that mind space, you know? So it's just a natural fit. So that's one example.
Yeah. Interesting. So how long does it take, you know, from the brainstorm to delivering the project?
I guess on this one, it was about 2 years.
Wow.
From, you know, the first year being, you know, talking about it. And we're always working on other projects at the same time, too. So we start to have meetings about, let's make another film, and start having concept meetings. And it kind of starts off pretty casually and then starts to turn into a thing of like, okay, we need to pitch this and get some support. So that's when things start to crystallize, and then it takes a while to raise the funds for it and make the plans and get all the riders on board. And then once we're into production, it was about a year of filming, and the editing overlapped a little bit on the tail end of that.
Wow.
Quite a bit of work.
Cool. Yeah, for sure. So what are some of the biggest challenges kind of along the way to making a big mountain bike film like Return to Earth?
There's so many little ones, I guess, you know. So I'd say, I mean, it's just the coordination of all the different pieces. It's why at the end of the film there's almost, you know, two or 300 people in the credits.
Is that a lot compared to like a studio film or something, like where you just have actors and it's like a more controlled environment?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably similar in a lot of ways. I guess it depends on the film, because sometimes some of those bigger films that would have 1,000 people working on it, but like from start to finish. So, everything from the whole coordination of trips and athletes and, you know, just getting the footage captured, all the way to the post-production and all the marketing and the artwork around the film and music, the whole process. There's tons of little challenges along the way. And now that we've been through the process a few times, it can surprise you. Sometimes it's, you know, music licensing can go smoothly. Sometimes it can be an absolute, like, stress case right down to the wire.
Yeah.
So it just depends.
Yeah. Well, I imagine funding, I mean, it sounds like that's one of the early things you got to figure out too. Is that difficult, or do you have like a good process in place for, you know, people that you work with or things like that to get a movie like this funded?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty difficult because we have to make sure that the film has a real value to the people that are supporting it. So we look for different ways to find value beyond just the creation of the film itself and people being stoked. So there's a lot of the other materials that go with the film and contests that we do and web series, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. It all kind of ties into the value that we give back to the film's partners. So a lot of thought goes into it. It takes a lot of work to get, you know, get those deals in place and get everyone aligned. And then once you have that, obviously we have to follow through on all the things you promised. So it's a pretty involved process.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like there's a lot of business stuff that has to happen. But what about like in the field? What are some particularly grueling conditions that you've been a part of as a filmmaker that maybe people would be surprised to hear about?
Well, I guess it always comes down to weather, you know. I mean, it's not, yeah, this just, I guess, sometimes can be tiring and grueling conditions, but it's we try and do as good of a job as possible to organize ourselves so we have a backup plan and then a backup plan to the backup plan and things like that, so we don't leave a shoot empty-handed.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, on this film, you know, we trying to think.
I just imagine like sitting, you know, somewhere and getting bit by bugs and, you know, sweating and just being like, oh my gosh, we have to get this. I'm getting so tired. I'm so hungry. Like, I don't know. Just maybe you guys are good and you've got that all dialed in. But man, I could see myself getting really frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely happens. That's definitely a part of it. I don't know. I mean, we really do love what we do. And in those times where it can be, there's times where you can get really worked by weather and bugs and cold and hunger and those types of things. But at the end of the day, it's kind of type two fun where it's like we actually do enjoy the challenge of that. And we're making bike films for a living, so you can never, ever really complain. So, I mean, it's usually for us just trying to overcome whatever challenges are thrown our way. So,
yeah.
I mean, one of the more difficult ones that come to mind just with dealing with natural elements was the fall color segment that we shot with our dog and Thomas Vanderham. You know, we really had to nail like a very small window.
Yeah, the leaves were literally falling in all the shots. I mean, that was the time to be there. It looked beautiful, but
yeah, and it was that year was last year was a particularly short window for them.
Yeah,
all the locals were saying like, yeah, this like it went from green to like beautiful to leaves starting to fall off the trees like very very quickly.
Yeah.
So we just had to be really strategic in how we moved around the different mountains we were working on. So sometimes we would shoot a location and the next day all the leaves were gone.
Oh, wow.
So we would just kind of strategically work our way around the mountains. And yeah, you know, we were kind of working against the clock and just trying to get stuff captured as fast as we could. And it was kind of throughout that process where we kind of came up with that ending shot where the final shot of the segment, the drone lifts up from the sky and the leaves are completely gone and bare.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's what we were left with by the time we left the shoot. It was like completely done. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's crazy. So in a lot of the films, you know, athletes seem to really be pushing themselves to perform big tricks. And I'm wondering, do the athletes choose to push themselves to make like a really big splash in a film, or are you as a director pushing them to do certain things? And is that risky?
Yeah, we never push them to do anything. That's just kind of been the way we've approached it since the very beginning.
Yeah.
Mainly because, you know, it's just a little bit offside, I guess, to push someone else into a dangerous situation for your own benefit. So we're always very careful to manage that. And I find, I mean, nowadays in recent years, it, you know, I'm even more cautious about it, where, you know, riders who want to do a lot of this like really crazy, like quite dangerous progressive stuff. And
yeah,
I find myself more often being like, okay, are you sure, yeah, you know, you want to do this? Because you don't have to, you know. We try to make sure that there's a balance there and that there isn't like too much Kodak courage going on, especially actually with this film. With there was the kids segment that we shot in Whistler.
Yeah.
We were definitely pretty mindful in that segment of making sure that everything they did, they were confident in doing.
Yeah.
And we had a rule with the kids too, that they weren't allowed to do anything that they haven't already done.
That's a good like, rule.
Yeah. Didn't want some some first time.
Right.
Whereas with like older, you know, professional athletes, they are doing stuff for the first time that they've never done. But, you know, they're experienced and you have to trust that they know what they're doing. So, so yeah, it's a careful balance. Of course, we want to see people pushing themselves and being progressive, but it has to come from them. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever find yourself sort of biting your lip, you know, looking through the lens like, oh man, I really hope he lands this or, you know, doesn't get hurt?
Yeah, definitely there's a lot of that that goes on where you're worried for the riders. I mean, you know, you become friends with everyone too. So there's, you don't want to see somebody get hurt. You know that it's going to have potentially long-term implications. And then you're also aware in the back of your mind that there's a lot of money on the line and a lot of coordination that came together to create a moment where we're all in a place and this, you know, a stunt is about to go down.
Yeah.
And so you, there can be definitely a lot on the line.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, you know that, well, there's always ways to redo shoots or reshoot, but obviously somebody getting hurt is the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah. Are there, I mean, are there things that you can do to sort of diminish the pressure a little bit on the athletes? I mean, it sounds like it could be really stressful for them as well. And that's when people potentially are getting hurt.
Yeah. I mean, we just do our best to just try to put things into perspective. You know, there's always lots of conversations that will happen on a shoot at dinner time and like the night before something is going to go down. And I'm just trying to make sure everyone kind of pulls back and has perspective that like, okay, you know, is this all, does this all make sense? You know, something like Brett Reeder's segment in Utah.
Yeah.
He was really pushing himself throughout that whole segment. He wanted everything that he was doing to be as progressive as possible. And so, you know, you find yourself, or he would have found himself in that situation, often riding on the edge. Although he made everything look so clean and effortless in his own way.
Yeah.
But, you know, that just, he's so driven to push himself.
Yeah. And in my opinion, that was my favorite segment. I mean, it really came through to me for sure that was special.
Yeah. And there were things that he backed away from that aren't in the film that he didn't do.
Yeah.
That's one thing that doesn't always get seen, but, you know, when we're out hiking around those landscapes and looking at different lines, you know, there's stuff that he looked at that he was pretty sure he could do, and you're starting to balance the risks of it all, and and then, you know, they kind of back away from it, which is a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So what's for you sort of the most exciting moment when you're making a mountain bike movie? Is it the brainstorming? That sounds like that could be fun. Or is it the shoot? Or is it actually, you know, seeing what you got and then being in the editing process? Or is it the release? I mean, I guess there's a lot of parts to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It is all the different parts. You know, yeah, I mean, each part has its own thing. Like, it's really fun to brainstorm, and I love the fact that we get to look at things like, okay, sky's the limit. Like, where in the world, do we want to go? Like, that's such a cool opportunity to be able to look at a map and talk to riders and think about, like, places we could go and shoot.
Yeah.
We try to make sure we don't, like, get away in ourselves and just go somewhere we really want to go. Like, it needs to logistically make sense. And so that, but yeah, I mean, also in the field, like, when a good shoot is coming together and you're getting towards the end of it and you can see that it's like what we set out to do is taking shape, that's probably one of the most gratifying feelings, because that's the part you feel like you have the least control over. So, yeah, I mean, for this particular film, the closing segment that we shot in Hawaii, there was some pretty heavy logistics that went into getting those shots. And those long shot sequences involved multiple riders. I mean, we kind of set out a goal to capture these scenes where multiple riders are riding down the hill and kind of interacting and cutting each other off, like, all the way down. And for that to come together, when it does, it's such a good feeling, because you, that take, it might never happen again. Like, you're capturing something that is, like, truly unique. So, yeah, we all get pretty fired up when that happens.
Yeah. Awesome. So are there any sort of tricks of the trade to making great mountain bike films that you'd be willing to share with our listeners? I know one of the things people talk about, you know, there's a lot of skidding in films and people are like, oh, that's bad for trails. Is that real? Do you guys, like, stage some of that a little bit for films, like, you know, make bigger roosts or whatever, or is everything sort of natural?
Yeah, I mean, I guess every single shot is planned out in a lot of ways. Riders know how they want to approach a certain piece of trail. And so if that means roosting the berm, you know, then they'll do that. And we'll try and capture it the best way possible, because it is a compelling look, you know, to see the dirt explode. And
are you going to add dirt on top, though, I guess is what I'm asking? Or like those leaves that were falling from the trees? I mean, somebody have a bag of leaves that they're kind of throwing up in the air, or sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, the leaf segment, we did take some things that we learned from the more extreme version of it, which was the dirt blizzard in Unreal. I mean, in the dirt blizzard, we learned how to control the whole scene and make it feel like you're in this other world where dirt is falling from the sky. So when we shot the Quebec fall color segment, we definitely wanted to make sure that, like, every shot was, like, really thought out how it was composed. And we did load up leaves into the scene. Like, a lot of times we would just, like, fill in as much as we could, and we'd put them on the trails. And we would shake trees to make the leaves be falling in the shots. And it's funny, because when you're out there, that stuff is happening for real all the time.
Yeah.
So it's not really faking it. But when you're trying to compose these shots, then yeah, you need to help.
Right.
Help it all happen in that, like, 3-second window when someone's riding through the corner.
Yeah.
So it's kind of taking inspiration from nature and just trying to, like, hone it into the moment and capture it.
Right. So it's more of like a hack. It's a way to make sure that you get what you need. And it's not digital too, right? I mean, that's what I'm most stoked about, that it's not just like, oh, let's just add some digital leaves in here, or, you know, add a little extra roost, like boost the roost on the computer. So, yeah.
Yeah, we don't do that with the roost or anything like that, that's for sure. You know, that's, and we're not always, say, like a roost shot. We're not always, like, looking for that, but it just happens. Like, a lot of times the riders will be riding trails and pre-riding sections and figuring out what moments feel the best and which ones should we capture. And so sometimes you'll be standing there and you'll watch our dog rip through a corner and you just roost the hell out of it. And then you're like, okay, well, we need to get a shot of that because that looked pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So it, yeah, a lot of times with filmmaking, we are setting the scene for good things to happen. So,
right.
So we'll just go to, like, even if it's shooting an existing trail, we'll go to somewhere where we know the trails are good and the riders just ride. And then we communicate on like what we thought looked good and what they thought felt good. And then you'd kind of decide what aspects you're going to capture.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, hopefully when you're watching it, right, obviously you're not thinking about all those things and, you know, how they do this, how they do that, you know, it just flows and it all feels very naturally. But we all know that this wasn't done in like a single run. You didn't have like 100 cameras like all the way down the mountain. Like you kind of do it in chunks and, you know, ready, set, go, like do that. All right, let's do the next section. But yeah, it all comes together really well.
Yeah, it's definitely a process that we've learned over the years of how to try to maximize, I guess, each day while we're out there. And like I said, it always just comes down to trying to capture that feeling of what it's like to ride on a bike. And that's why we often move the camera quite a bit and we will incorporate POVs and cable cams and drones and anything we can to try and just get that feeling of flowing through the terrain.
Yeah, very cool. So you kind of touched on this earlier, but what does a successful mountain bike film look like for you? Is it about ticket sales or downloads, or like what are sort of the metrics that you look at to gauge the success of a film?
I would say the number one thing is it inspiring people to get out and ride or to get involved in the sport if they're not already? So people sharing it and people like saying that they've connected with some aspect of the film. Mm-hmm. I'd say that's the number one thing. Of course, we want it to sell well and we want to make money at it because it's what we do for a living. Mm-hmm. But those two things usually go hand in hand, you know? I mean, you don't want a movie just to be successful and that's it. Like, it's so important that that people feel like they have a connection to the sport through our film.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so over the years, you know, we've had stories, lots of stories, and with this film too, where people say that, you know, it literally like changed their lives. Like they actually made life changes after watching the film. And
wow,
I can understand that because the same thing happened for me, like I said, when I was 18 or 19 and I watched the snowboard film TB3. I like halfway through the movie, I remember being like, I am moving to Whistler like this. I'm just like that. Now I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. That's powerful.
It is. And I've heard other people, say that to us over the years that they've made the move to, well, we're based in British Columbia, so we've heard those stories of people that lived in other parts of the world and moved here or made a change in their career or something along those lines. And to me, those are, I mean, that's the best stories you can possibly hear because I think it's a nice opportunity if we can help make people's lives better through mountain biking, then that's an absolute home run.
Yeah, that's great. Do you hear from many people outside the sport? I mean, do the films reach people? It seems like no matter who you are, if you watch this, you're going to get inspired and you're going to be like, wow, that's really cool. I know nothing about mountain biking, but like, this is cool. Do you hear those stories? Like, how do you even reach those people?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. And that's something that definitely, everybody involved in the film wants is to be able to reach people outside of the sport as well and try to grow the pie and just get more people excited about what we're doing. It is a tricky one to get it in front of audiences that aren't mountain bikers or aren't accustomed to watching that kind of content. Probably the biggest example we have of that is the one-shot segment with Brandon Semenuk that we released during Unreal.
Yeah.
Because that thing went very, very viral. And between all the different platforms, it was in the 70 or 80 million view range. That was kind of the last time we had checked. That was the kind of thing where for the year afterwards, you know, you'd be talking to different people in the commercial film world where we also do stuff, and people approaching us saying, oh, you guys shoot mountain bike films, that's cool. Like, oh, have you seen that shot with the one guy in the green grass and he's riding down the hill? And we're, you know, and that's kind of a neat one where obviously a lot of people that weren't mountain bikers watched that and might have opened their eyes to the sport a little bit more. So
yeah, really cool. Yeah, well, so you mentioned the commercial work that you guys do. Did you start with making mountain bike films like just for yourselves, or was it the commercial work? And then how do you sort of balance the two of those in terms of resources? I imagine, you know, you're always, you're trying to pay the bills, but you're also trying to do projects that you enjoy. How do you balance that?
It's definitely a tricky balance when it comes to our own time and resources. And I mean, it started with the films, but you know, as the years went on and YouTube was introduced and Instagram came along and more web content started to exist, that's when we started to kind of get pulled in that direction as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we're based close to Vancouver, and there's a lot of ad agencies down there that do commercial work. And so as kind of the years have gone on, our skill set is like transferred over onto the commercial side of things as well. Where having like a relatively small film crew that can capture high quality film and work in a kind of a lean environment is that's something that's sought after more and more these days. So
Yeah,
I mean, we really enjoy doing that stuff as well because it gives us a cool opportunity to do stuff outside of mountain biking, which is always interesting and always neat for us to do. But we try to balance it because we love mountain biking and don't ever want to be outside of our cozy, awesome little bike world. So
yeah, seems like you definitely learn a lot from doing those different types of projects and understanding different priorities and the way things are presented. But yeah, at the same time too, it's like every truck ad you see seems to have a mountain bike involved in it, or, you know, even a lot of the drug ads here in the US, you know, it's like, take this drug and you can get back out on the mountain bike trail. So yeah, it seems like a good fit.
I know, it's funny when us as mountain bikers see that outside of our world, you know, you're like, whoa, it's in the mainstream. Like when you see
most of the time, they don't seem to get it right. You know, like you see it and you're like, oh man, that's cheesy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I know, it happens all the time. And, I know that's something that I guess it'd just be good if there was, more mountain bikers out there that could be involved with that stuff to just kind of help position, how our sport is seen to the outside world a little bit better. Cause, I think it's important to, I don't know, that the true reality of the style and the culture, most importantly, the culture of the sport is actually like translated in a meaningful way outside of the sport. You know, it can be, yeah, obviously they can get it really wrong sometimes.
Yeah, interesting. So tell us about some of your upcoming projects. Are you guys working on another film right now? I mean, you said it's, you know, a year, 2 years for a lot of the projects. So I imagine you got some things on the fire right now.
Yeah, we do. There's some stuff that we can't really discuss yet, but yeah, definitely. I think we have about 3 different film ideas that we're talking about right now that we want to do. All 3 of them, we're trying to decide what order and how we're going to make it all work. So probably the first thing, though, that's on our roster that we have started working on would be a documentary on Stevie Smith. Yeah, and so we kind of put that out there during our premiere tour. We created a little trailer for it, and we kind of promoted that that's something we're working on and we'd like to release next year. So that will not be the only thing we're doing.
Is that the first documentary that you guys have done?
It would be the first full-length, like, pure documentary that we've done.
Okay.
We've done a lot of shorter form documentaries, in the 10-minute range, maybe up to, about 15. So we have done quite a few shorter ones, but that would be the first full length that we do. So, it'd be cool. I mean, we're always interested in trying to learn and do different forms of film. And obviously Stevie's story is close to our heart, and it's something that we think is a great inspirational story, that we want to tell. And, so it's something we decided that we wanted to do next. And it's something that we're doing to raise money for the Stevie Smith Foundation. So all the proceeds and stuff from the film will go towards that foundation. So, it'll be a lot of work to get that going as well. So,
It sounds exciting. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Darcy, thanks so much for joining us. I know I've learned a ton about mountain bike filmmaking and what Ant Hill is up to, and I know our listeners will be stoked as well. So thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great chatting.
So you can learn more at anthillfilms.com, where you can find out about some of the projects that the group has been working on. And you can find their latest film, Return to Earth, on Apple TV, Google Play, and Amazon.com. That's all I've got this week. We'll talk to you again next week.